of his nostrils. I wondered if it hurt his sinuses. "What are they for?" I asked. Iridian scowled.
"We raise animals for lots of clients. Apollo, Diomedes, and others."
"Like who?"
"No more questions."
Finally, we came out of the woods. Perched on a hill above us was a big ranch house, all white stone and wood and big windows. "It looks like a Frank Lloyd Wright," Annabeth said. I guess she was talking about some architectural thing. To me, it just looked like the kind of place where a few demigods could get into serious trouble. We hiked up the hill.
"Don't break the rules,"
Iridian warned us as we walked up the steps to the front porch.
"No fighting, no drawn weapons, and don't make any comments about the boss's appearance."
"Why?" I asked. "What does he look like?" Before Iridian could reply, a new voice said,
"Welcome to the Triple G Ranch."
The man on the porch had a normal head, which was a relief. His face was weathered and brown from years in the sun. He had slick black hair and a black pencil mustache like villains have in old movies. He smiled at us, but the smile wasn't friendly, more amused, like, oh boy, more people to torture. I didn't ponder that very long, though, because then I noticed his body, or bodies. He had three of them. Now, you'd think I would have gotten used to weird anatomy after Janus and Briaris, but this guy was three complete people. His neck connected to the middle chest like normal, but he had two more chests, one to either side, connected at the shoulders with a few inches in between. His left arm grew out of his left chest, and the same on the right, so he had two arms but four armpits, if that makes any sense. The chests all connected into one enormous torso with two regular but very beefy legs, and he wore the most oversized pair of Levi's I'd ever seen. His chests each wore a different color Western shirt, green, yellow, red, like a stoplight. I wondered how he dressed the middle chest since it had no arms. The cowherd Iridian nudged me.
"Say hello to Mr. Garion."
"Hi," I said. "Nice chests. Ranch. Nice ranch you have." Before the three-bodied man could respond, Nico D'Angelo came out of the glass doors onto the porch.
"Garion, I won't wait for..."
He froze when he saw us. Then he drew his sword. The blade was just like I'd seen in my dream, short, sharp, and dark as midnight. Garion snarled when he saw it.
"Put that away, Mr. D'Angelo. I ain't gonna have my guests killing each other."
"But that's..."
"Percy Jackson," Garion supplied. "Annabeth Chase, and a couple of their monster friends. Yes, I know."
"Monster friends?" Grover said indignantly.
"That man is wearing three shirts," Tyson said, like he was just realizing this.
"They let my sister die."
Nico's voice trembled with rage.
"They're here to kill me."
"Nico, we're not here to kill you." I raised my hands. "What happened to Bianca was..."
"Don't speak her name. You're not worthy to even talk about her."
"Wait a minute."
Annabeth pointed at Garion.
"How do you know our names?"
The three-bodied man winked.
"I'll make it my business to keep informed, darling. Everybody pops into the ranch from time to time. Everyone needs something from old Garion. Now, Mr. D'Angelo, put that ugly sword away before I have Iridian take it from you."
Iridian sighed, but he hefted his spiked club. At his feet, Orthus growled. Nico hesitated. He looked thinner and paler than he had in the Iris messages. I wondered if he'd eaten in the last week. His black clothes were dusty from traveling in the labyrinth, and his dark eyes were full of hate. He was too young to look so angry. I still remembered him as the cheerful little kid who played with Mythomagic cards. Reluctantly, he sheathed his sword.
If you come near me, Percy, I'll summon help. You don't want to meet my helpers, I promise.
I believe you, I said. Garion patted Nico's shoulder.
There, we've all made nice. Now come along, folks. I want to give you a tour of the ranch.
Garion had a trolley thing, like one of those kiddie trains that take you around zoos. It was painted black and white in a cowhide pattern. The driver's car had a set of longhorns stuck to the hood, and the horn sounded like a cowbell. I figured maybe this was how he tortured people. He embarrassed them to death riding around in the Moomobile. Nico sat in the very back, probably so he could keep an eye on us. Iridian crawled in next to him with a spiked club and pulled his cowboy hat over his eyes like he was going to take a nap. Orthis jumped in the front seat next to Garion and began barking happily in two-part harmony. Annabeth, Grover, Tyson, and I took the middle two cars.
"We have a huge operation," Garion boasted as the Moomobile lurched forward. "Horses and cattle mostly, but all sorts of exotic varieties, too."
We came over a hill, and Annabeth gasped.
"Hippolectrians? I thought they were extinct."
At the bottom of the hill was a fenced-in pasture with a dozen of the weirdest animals they'd ever seen. Each had the front half of a horse and the back half of a rooster. Their rear feet were huge yellow claws. They had feathery tails and red wings. As I watched, two of them got in a fight over a pile of seed. They reared up on their back legs and whinnied and flapped their wings at each other until the smaller one galloped away, its rear bird legs putting a little hop in its step.
"Rooster ponies," Tyson said in amazement. "Do they lay eggs?"
"Once a year," Garion grinned in the rearview mirror. "Very much in demand for omelets."
"That's horrible," Annabeth said. "They must be an endangered species."
Garion waved his hand.
"Gold is gold, darling, and you haven't tasted the omelets."
"That's not right,"
Grover murmured. But Garion just kept narrating the tour.
"Now over here," he said, "we have our fire-breathing horses, which you may have seen on your way in. They're bred for war, naturally."
"What war?" I asked. Garion grinned slyly.
"Oh, whichever one comes along. And over yonder, of course, are our prize red cows."
Sure enough, hundreds of the cherry-colored cattle were grazing the side of a hill.
"So many," Grover said.
"Yes, well, Apollo is too busy to see to them," Garion explained. "So he subcontracts to us. We breed them vigorously because there's such a demand."
"For what?" I asked. Garion raised an eyebrow.
"Meat, of course. Armies have to eat."
"You kill the sacred cows of the sun god for hamburger meat?" Grover said. "That's against the ancient laws."
"Oh, don't get so worked up, Sater. They're just animals."
"Just animals?"
"Yes, and if Apollo cared, I'm sure he would tell us."
"If he knew," I muttered. Nico sat forward.
"I don't care about any of this, Garion. We had business to discuss, and this wasn't it."
"All in good time, Mr. D'Angelo. Look over here. Some of my exotic game."
The next field was ringed in barbed wire. The whole area was crawling with giant scorpions.
"Triple G Ranch," I said, suddenly remembering. "Your mark was on the crates at camp. Quintus got his scorpions from you."
"Quintus?"
Garion mused.
"Short gray hair, muscular swordsman?"
"Yeah."
"Never heard of him," Garion said. "Now over here are my prize stables. You must see them."
I didn't need to see them, because as soon as we got within 300 yards, I started to smell them. Near the banks of a green river was a horse corral the size of a football field. Stables lined one side of it. About 100 horses were milling around in the muck. And when I say muck, I mean horse poop. It was the most disgusting thing I'd ever seen, like a poop blizzard had come through and dumped 4 feet of the stuff overnight. The horses were really gross from wading through it, and the stables were just as bad. It reeked like you would not believe, worse than the garbage boats on the East River. Even Nico gagged.
"What is that?" "My stables," Garion said. "Well, actually, they belong to Aegeus, but we watch over them for a small monthly fee. Aren't they lovely?"
"They're disgusting," Annabeth said.
"Lots of poop,"
Tyson observed.
"How can you keep animals like that?" Grover cried. "Y'all getting on my nerves," Garion said. "These are flesh-eating horses, see? They like these conditions."
"Plus, you're too cheap to have them cleaned,"
Iridian mumbled from under his hat.
"Quiet," Garion snapped. "All right, perhaps the stables are a bit challenging to clean. Perhaps they do make me nauseous when the wind blows the wrong way. But so what? My clients still pay me well."
"What clients?" I demanded.
"Oh, you'd be surprised how many people will pay for a flesh-eating horse. They make great garbage disposals. Wonderful way to terrify your enemies. Great at birthday parties. We rent them out all the time."
"You're a monster," Annabeth decided. Garion stopped the moomobile and turned to look at her.
"What gave it away? Was it the 3 bodies? "You have to let these animals go," Grover said. "It's not right."
"And the clients you keep talking about?" Annabeth said. "You work for Kronos, don't you? You're supplying his army with horses, food, whatever they need." Garion shrugged, which was very weird since he had 3 sets of shoulders. It looked like he was doing the wave all by himself.
"I work for anyone with gold, young lady. I'm a businessman, and I sell them anything I have to offer."
He climbed out of the moomobile and strolled toward the stables as if enjoying the fresh air. It would have been a nice view, with the river and the trees and hills and all, except for the quagmire of horse muck. Nico got out of the back car and stormed over to Garion. The cowherd, Iridian, wasn't as sleepy as he looked. He hefted his club and walked after Nico.
"I came here for business, Garion," Nico said, "and you haven't answered me."
"Mmm."
Garion examined a cactus. His left arm reached over and scratched his middle chest.
"Yes, you'll get a deal, all right."
"My ghost told me you could help. He said you could guide us to the soul we need."
"Wait a second," I said. "I thought I was the soul you wanted." Nico looked at me like I was crazy.
"You? Why would I want you? Bianca's soul is worth 1,000 of yours. Now, can you help me, Garion, or not?"
"Oh, I imagine I could," the rancher said. "Your ghost friend, by the way, where is he?"
Nico looked uneasy. "He can't form in broad daylight. It's hard for him. But he's around somewhere." Garion smiled.
"I'm sure. Minus likes to disappear when things get difficult."
"Minus?" I remembered the man I'd seen in my dreams with the golden crown, the pointed beard, and the cruel eyes. "You mean that evil king? That's the ghost who's been giving you advice? It's none of your business, Percy." Nico turned back to Garion. "And what do you mean about things getting difficult?" The 3-bodied man sighed.
"Well, you see, Nico. Can I call you Nico?"
"No."
"You see, Nico, Luke Castellan is offering very good money for half-bloods, especially powerful half-bloods. And I'm sure when he learns your little secret, who you really are, he'll pay very, very well indeed."
Nico drew his sword, but Iridian knocked it out of his hand. Before I could get up, Orthus pounced on my chest and growled, his face is an inch away from mine.
"I would stay in the car, all of you," Garion warned, "or Orthus will tear Mr. Jackson's throat out. Now, Iridian, if you would be so kind, secure Nico."
The cowherd spit into the grass.
"Do I have to?"
"Yes, you fool."
Iridian looked bored, but he wrapped one huge arm around Nico and lifted him up like a wrestler.
"Pick up the sword, too," Garion said with distaste. "There's nothing I hate worse than Stygian iron."
Iridian picked up the sword, careful not to touch the blade.
"Now," Garion said cheerfully, "we've had the tour. Let's go back to the lodge, have some lunch, and send an iris message to our friends in the Titan army."
"You fiend!" Annabeth cried.
Garion smiled at her.
"Don't worry, my dear. Once I've delivered Mr. D'Angelo, you and your party can go. I don't interfere with quests. Besides, I've been paid well to give you safe passage, which does not, I'm afraid, include Mr. D'Angelo."
"Paid by whom?" Annabeth said. "What do you mean?"
"Never you mind, darling. Let's be off, shall we?"
"Wait," I said, and Orthus growled. I stayed perfectly still so he wouldn't tear my throat out. "Garion, you said you're a businessman. Make me a deal." Garion narrowed his eyes.
"What sort of deal? Do you have gold?"
"I've got something better. Barter."
"But Mr. Jackson, you've got nothing."
"You could have him clean the stables,"
Iridian suggested innocently. "I'll do it," I said. "If I fail, you get all of us. Trade us all to Luke for gold."
"Assuming the horses don't eat you," Garion observed.
"Either way, you get my friends," I said. "But if I succeed, you've got to let all of us go, including Nico."
"No,"
Nico screamed. "Don't do me any favors, Percy. I don't want your help." Garion chuckled.
"Percy Jackson, those stables haven't been cleaned in 1,000 years. Though it's true I might be able to sell more stable space if all that poop was cleared away."
"So what have you got to lose?"
The rancher hesitated.
"All right, I'll accept your offer. But you have to get it done by sunset. If you fail, your friends get sold and I get rich."
"Deal."
He nodded.
"I'm gonna take your friends with me. Back to the lodge. We'll wait for you there."
Iridian gave me a funny look. It might have been sympathy. He whistled, and the dog jumped off me and onto Annabeth's lap. She yelped. I knew Tyson and Grover would never try anything as long as Annabeth was a hostage. I got out of the car and locked eyes with her.
"I hope you know what you're doing," she said quietly.
"I hope so, too." Garion got behind the driver's wheel. Iridian hauled Nico into the back seat.
"Sunset," Garion reminded me. "No later."
He laughed at me once more, sounded his cowbell horn, and the Moomobile rumbled off down the trail. Chapter 9. I Scoop Poop. I lost hope when I saw the horse's teeth. As I got closer to the fence, I held my shirt over my nose to block the smell. One stallion waded through the muck and whinnied angrily at me. He bared his teeth, which were pointed like a bear's. I tried to talk to him in my mind. I can do that with most horses. "Hi," I told him. "I'm going to clean your stables. Won't that be great?"
"Yes," the horse said. "Come inside. Eat you, tasty half-blood."
"But I'm Poseidon's son," I protested. "He created horses." "Usually this gets me VIP treatment in the equestrian world, but not this time."
"Yes," the horse agreed enthusiastically. Poseidon can come in too. We will eat you both. Seafood.
Seafood.
The other horses chimed in as they waded through the field. Flies were buzzing everywhere, and the heat of the day didn't make the smell any better. I'd had some idea that I could do this challenge because I remembered how Hercules had done it. He'd channeled a river into the stables and cleaned them out that way. I figured I could maybe control the water, but if I couldn't get close to the horses without getting eaten, that was a problem. And the river was downhill from the stables, a lot farther away than I'd realized, almost half a mile. The problem of the poop looked a lot bigger up close. I picked up a rusted shovel and experimentally scooped some away from the fence line. Great, only 4 billion shovelfuls to go. The sun was already sinking, at a few hours at best. I decided the river was my only hope. At least it would be easier to think at the riverside than it was here. I set off downhill. When I got to the river, I found a girl waiting for me. She was wearing jeans and a green t-shirt, and her long brown hair was braided with river grass. She had a stern look on her face. Her arms were crossed.
"Oh, no, you don't," she said. I stared at her. "Are you a Naiad?"
She rolled her eyes.
"Of course.
But you speak English, and you're out of the water.
What, you don't think we can act human if we want to?"
I'd never thought about it. I kind of felt stupid, though, because I'd seen plenty of Naiads at camp, and they'd never done much more than giggle and wave at me from the bottom of the canoe lake. "Look," I said, "I just came to ask..."
"I know who you are," she said. "And I know what you want, and the answer is no. I'm not going to have my river used again to clean that filthy stable."
"But..."
"Oh, save it, sea boy. You ocean god types always think you're so much more important than some little river, don't you? Well, let me tell you, this Naiad is not going to be pushed around just because your daddy is Poseidon. This is freshwater territory, mister. The last guy who asked me this favor, oh, he was way better looking than you, by the way. He convinced me, and that was the worst mistake I've ever made. Do you have any idea what all that horse manure does to my ecosystem? Do I look like a sewage treatment plant to you? My fish will die. I'll never get the muck out of my plants. I'll be sick for years. No, thank you."
The way she talked reminded me of my mortal friend, Rachel Elizabeth Dayer. Kind of like she was punching me with words. I couldn't blame the Naiad. Now that I thought about it, I'd be pretty mad if somebody dumped 4 million pounds of manure in my home, but still. "My friends are in danger," I told her.
"Well, that's too bad, but it's not my problem, and you're not going to ruin my river."
She looked like she was ready for a fight. Her fists were balled, but I thought I heard a little quiver in her voice. Suddenly, I realized that despite her angry attitude, she was afraid of me. She probably thought I was going to fight her for control of the river, and she was worried she would lose. The thought made me sad. I felt like a bully, a son of Poseidon throwing his weight around. I sat down on a tree stump. "Okay, you win." The Naiad looked surprised.
"Really?"
"I'm not going to fight you. It's your river." She relaxed her shoulders.
Oh, good. I mean, good thing for you."
"But my friends and I are going to get sold to the Titans if I don't clean those stables by sunset, and I don't know how." The river gurgled along cheerfully. A snake slid through the water and ducked its head under. Finally, the Naiad sighed.
"I'll tell you a secret, son of the sea god. Scoop up some dirt."
"What?"
"You heard me."
I crouched down and scooped up a handful of Texas dirt. It was dry and black and spotted with tiny clumps of white rock. No, something besides rock.
"Those are shells," the Naiad said. Petrified seashells. Millions of years ago, even before the time of the gods, when only Gaia and Uranus reigned, this land was underwater. It was part of the sea. Suddenly I saw what she meant. There were little pieces of ancient sea urchins in my hand, mollusk shells. Even the limestone rocks had impressions of seashells embedded in them. Okay, I said. What good does that do me?
You're not so different from me, demigod. Even when I'm out of the water is within me. It's my life source.
She stepped back, put her feet in the river, and smiled.
I hope you find a way to rescue your friends.
And with that, she turned to liquid and melted into the river. The sun was touching the hills when I got back to the stables. Somebody must have come by and fed the horses because they were tearing into huge animal carcasses. I couldn't tell what kind of animal, and I really didn't want to know. If it was possible for the stables to get more disgusting, 50 horses tearing into raw meat did it.
Seafood, one thought when he saw me. Come in. We're still hungry.
What was I supposed to do? I couldn't use the river, and the fact that this place had been underwater a million years ago didn't exactly help me now. I looked at the little calcified seashell in my palm, then at the huge mountain of dung. Frustrated, I threw the shell into the poop. I was about to turn my back on the horses when I heard a sound. Like a balloon with a leak. I looked down where I'd thrown the shell. A tiny spout of water was shooting out of the muck. No way, I muttered. Hesitantly, I stepped toward the fence. Get bigger, I told the water spout. Spoosh! Water shot 3 feet into the air and kept bubbling. It was impossible, but there it was. A couple of horses came over to check it out. One put his mouth to the spring and recoiled.
Yuck, he said. Salty.
It was seawater in the middle of a Texas ranch. I scooped up another handful of dirt and picked out the shell fossils. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I ran around the length of the stable, throwing shells into the dung piles. Everywhere a shell hit, a saltwater spring erupted.
Stop, the horses cried. Meat is good. Baths are bad.
Then I noticed the water wasn't running out of the stables or flowing downhill like water normally would. It simply bubbled around each spring and sank into the ground, taking the dung with it. The horse poop dissolved in the salt water, leaving regular old wet dirt.
More, I yelled.
There was a tugging sensation in my gut, and the water spouts exploded like the world's largest car wash. Salt water shot 20 feet into the air. The horses went crazy, running back and forth as the geysers sprayed them from all directions. Mountains of poop began to melt like ice. The tugging sensation became more intense, painful even, but there was something exhilarating about seeing all that salt water. I had made this. I had brought the ocean to this hillside.
Stop, Lord! A horse cried. Stop, please.
Water was sloshing everywhere now. The horses were drenched, and some were panicking and slipping in the mud. The poop was completely gone. Tons of it just dissolved into the earth, and the water was now starting to pool, trickling out of the stable, making 100 little streams down toward the river.
Stop, I told the water.
Nothing happened. The pain in my gut was building. If I didn't shut off the geyser soon, the salt water would run into the river and poison the fish and plants.
Stop!
I concentrated all my might on shutting off the force of the sea. Suddenly, the geyser shut down. I collapsed to my knees, exhausted. In front of me was a shiny, clean horse stable, a field of wet, salty mud, and 50 horses that had been scoured so thoroughly their coats gleamed. Even the meat scraps between their teeth had been washed out.
"We won't eat you," the horses wailed. "Please, Lord, no more salty baths."
"On one condition," I said, "you only eat the food your handlers give you from now on, not people, or I'll be back with more seashells." The horses whinnied and made me a whole lot of promises that they would be good flesh-eating horses from now on, but I didn't stick around to chat. The sun was going down. I turned and ran full speed toward the ranch house. I smelled the barbecue before I reached the house, and that made me madder than ever, because I really love barbecue. The deck was set up for a party. Streamers and balloons decorated the railing. Garion was flipping burgers on a huge barbecue cooker made from an oil drum. Iridian lounged at a picnic table, picking his fingernails with a knife. The two-headed dog sniffed the ribs and burgers that were frying on the grill. And then I saw my friends, Tyson, Grover, Annabeth, and Nico, all tossed in a corner, tied up like rodeo animals, with their ankles and wrists roped together and their mouths gagged. "Let them go," I yelled, still out of breath from running up the steps. "I clean the stables." Garion turned. He wore an apron on each chest, with one word on each, so together they spelled out, "Kiss the chef."
"Did you now? How'd you manage it?"
I was pretty impatient, but I told him. He nodded appreciatively.
"Very ingenious. It would have been better if you'd poisoned that pesky naiad, but no matter."
"Let my friends go," I said. "We had a deal."
"Ah, I've been thinking about that. The problem is, if I let them go, I don't get paid."
"You promised." Garion made a tisk-tisk noise.
"But did you make me swear on the River Styx? No, you didn't. So it's not binding. When you're conducting business, Sonny, you should always get a binding oath."
I drew my sword. Orthus growled. One head leaned down next to Grover's ear and bared its fangs.
"Iridian," Garion said. "The boy is starting to annoy me. Kill him."
Iridian studied me. I didn't like my odds against him and that huge club.
"Kill him yourself," Iridian said.
Garion raised his eyebrows.
"Excuse me?"
"You heard me," Iridian grumbled. "You keep sending me out to do your dirty work. You pick fights for no good reason, and I'm tired of dying for you. You want to fight the kid? Do it yourself."
It was the most un-Ares-like thing I'd ever heard a son of Ares say. Garion threw down his spatula.
"You dare defy me? I should fire you right now."
"And who'd take care of your cattle? Orthus, heel."
The dog immediately stopped growling at Grover and came to sit by the cowherd's feet.
"Fine," Garion snarled. "I'll deal with you later, after the boy is dead."
He picked up two carving knives and threw them at me. I deflected one with my sword. The other impaled itself on the picnic table an inch from Iridian's hand. I went on the attack. Garion parried my first strike with a pair of red-hot tongs and lunged at my face with a barbecue fork. I got inside his next thrust and stabbed him right through the middle chest.
"Oh!"
He crumpled to his knees. I waited for him to disintegrate, the way monsters usually do, but instead, he just grimaced and began to stand up. The wound in his chef's apron started to heal.
"Nice try, Sonny," he said. "Thing is, I have three hearts. The perfect backup system."
He tipped over the barbecue, and coals spilled everywhere. One landed next to Annabeth's face, and she let out a muffled scream. Tyson strained against his bonds, but even his strength wasn't enough to break them. I had to end this fight before my friends got hurt. I jabbed Garion in his left chest, but he only laughed. I stuck him in the right stomach. No good. I might as well have been sticking a sword in a teddy bear for all the reaction he showed. Three hearts. The perfect backup system. Stabbing one at a time was no good. I ran into the house.
Coward, he cried. Come back and die right.
The living room walls were decorated with a bunch of gruesome hunting trophies. Stuffed deer and dragon heads, a gun case, a sword display, and a bow with a quiver. Garion threw his barbecue fork, and it thudded into the wall right next to my head. He drew two swords from the wall display.
Your head's gonna go right there, Jackson, next to the grizzly bear.
I had a crazy idea. I dropped Riptide and grabbed the bow off the wall. I was the worst archery shot in the world. I couldn't hit the targets at camp, much less a bullseye, but I had no choice. I couldn't win this fight with a sword. I prayed to Artemis and Apollo, the twin archers, hoping they might take pity on me for once. Please, guys, just one shot, please? I notched an arrow. Garion laughed.
You fool! One arrow is no better than one sword.
He raised his swords and charged. I dove sideways. Before he could turn, I shot my arrow into the side of his right chest. I heard thump, thump, thump as the arrow passed clean through each of his chests and flew out his left side, embedding itself in the forehead of the grizzly bear trophy. Garion dropped his swords. He turned and stared at me.
You can't shoot. They told me you couldn't.
His face turned a sickly shade of green. He collapsed to his knees and began crumbling into sand, until all that was left were three cooking aprons and an oversized pair of cowboy boots. I got my friends untied. Iridian didn't try to stop me. Then I stoked up the barbecue and threw the food into the flames as a burnt offering for Artemis and Apollo. Thanks, guys, I said. I owe you one. The sky thundered in the distance, so I figured maybe the burgers smelled okay.
Yay for Percy, Tyson said.
Can we tie up this cowherd now? Nico asked.
Yeah, Grover agreed, and that dog almost killed me.
I looked at Iridian, who still was sitting relaxed at the picnic table. Orthus had both his heads on the cowherd's knees. How long will it take Garion to reform? I asked him. Iridian shrugged.
100 years. He's not one of those fast reformers, thank the gods. You've done me a favor.
You said you'd died for him before, I remembered. How?
I've worked for that creep for thousands of years. Started as a regular half-blood, but I chose immortality when my dad offered it. Worst mistake I ever made. Now I'm stuck here at this ranch. I can't leave. I can't quit. I'll just tend the cows and fight Garion's fights. We're kinda tied together.
Maybe you can change things, I said. Iridian narrowed his eyes.
Hell.
Be nice to the animals, take care of them, stop selling them for food, and stop dealing with the Titans. Iridian thought about that.
That'd be all right.
Get the animals on your side, and they'll help you. Once Garion gets back, maybe he'll be working for you this time. Iridian grinned.
Now that I could live with.
So you won't try to stop us leaving?
Shoot, no.
Annabeth rubbed her bruised wrists. She was still looking at Iridian suspiciously. Your boss said that somebody paid for our safe passage. Who? The cowherd shrugged.
Maybe he was just saying that to fool you.
What about the Titans? I asked. Did you Iris message them about Nico yet?
Nope. Garion was waiting until after the barbecue. They don't know anything about him.
Nico was glaring at me. I wasn't sure what to do about him. I doubted he would agree to come with us.
On the other hand, I couldn't just let him roam around on his own. "You could stay here until we're done with our quest," I told him. "It would be safe."
"Safe?" Nico said. "What do you care if I'm safe? You got my sister killed."
"Nico," Annabeth said, "that wasn't Percy's fault, and Garion wasn't lying about Kronos wanting to capture you. If he knew who you were, he'd do anything to get you on his side."
"I'm not on anyone's side, and I'm not afraid."
"You should be," Annabeth said. "Your sister wouldn't want..."
"If you cared for my sister, you'd help me bring her back."
"A soul for a soul?" I said.
"Yes."
"But if you didn't want my soul,
I'm not explaining anything to you."
He blinked tears out of his eyes.
"And I will bring her back."
"Bianca wouldn't want to be brought back," I said.
"Not like that."
"You didn't know her," he shouted.
"How do you know what she'd want?"
I stared at the flames in the barbecue pit. I thought about the line in Annabeth's prophecy. "You shall rise or fall by the Ghost King's hand." That had to be Minos. And I had to convince Nico not to listen to him.
"Let's ask Bianca."
The sky seemed to grow darker all of a sudden.
"I've tried,"
Nico said miserably.
"She won't answer."
"Try again. I've got a feeling she'll answer with me here."
"Why would she?"
"Because she's been sending me Iris messages," I said, suddenly sure of it. "She's been trying to warn me what you're up to, so I can protect you."
Nico shook his head. "That's impossible."
"One way to find out. You said you're not afraid." I turned to Iridian.
"We're going to need a pit, like a grave, and food and drinks."
"Percy," Annabeth warned, "I don't think this is a good..."
"All right," Nico said. "I'll try."
Iridian scratched his beard.
"There's a hole dug out back for a septic tank. We could use that. Cyclops boy, fetch my ice chest from the kitchen. I hope the dead like root beer."
Chapter 10. We play the game show of death. We did our summons after dark. A 20-foot-long pit in front of the septic tank. The tank was bright yellow, with a smiley face and red words painted on the side. Happy Flush Disposal Company. It didn't quite go with the mood of summoning the dead. The moon was full. Silver clouds drifted across the sky.
"Minos should be here by now," Nico said, frowning. "It's full dark."
"Maybe he got lost," I said hopefully. Nico poured root beer and tossed barbecue into the pit, then began chanting in ancient Greek. Immediately, the bugs in the woods stopped chirping. In my pocket, the Stygian ice dog whistle started to grow colder, freezing against the side of my leg.
"Make him stop,"
Tyson whispered to me. Part of me agreed. This was unnatural. The night air felt cold and menacing, but before I could say anything, the first spirits appeared. Sulfurous mist seeped out of the ground. Shadows thickened into human forms. One blue shade drifted to the edge of the pit and knelt to drink.
"Stop him,"
Nico said, momentarily breaking his chant.
"Only Bianca may drink."
I drew Riptide. The ghosts retreated with a collective hiss at the sight of my celestial bronze blade, but it was too late to stop the first spirit. He had already solidified into the shape of a bearded man in white robes. A circlet of gold wreathed his head, and even in death, his eyes were alive with malice.
"Minos," Nico said, "what are you doing?"
"My apologies, master," the ghost said, though he didn't sound very sorry. "The sacrifice smelled so good, I couldn't resist."
He examined his own hands and smiled.
"It is good to see myself again,
almost in solid form.
You are disrupting the ritual, Nico protested. Get...
The spirits of the dead began shimmering dangerously bright, and Nico had to take up the chant again to keep them at bay.
Yes, quite right, Master, Mina said with amusement. You keep chanting. I've only come to protect you from these liars who would deceive you.
He turned to me as if I were some kind of cockroach.
Percy Jackson. My, my. The sons of Poseidon haven't improved over the centuries, have they?
I wanted to punch him, but I figured my fist would go right through his face. We're looking for Bianca D'Angelo, I said. Get lost. The ghost chuckled.
I understand you once killed my Minotaur with your bare hands, but worse things await you in the maze. Do you really believe Daedalus will help you?
The other spirits stirred in agitation. Annabeth drew her knife and helped me keep them away from the pit. Grover got so nervous he clung to Tyson's shoulder.
Daedalus cares nothing for you, half-bloods, Minos warned. You can't trust him. He is old beyond counting and crafty. He is bitter from the guilt of murder and is cursed by the gods.
The guilt of murder? I asked. Who did he kill?
Do not change the subject, the ghost growled. You are hindering Nico. You try to persuade him to give up his goal. I would make him a lord.
Enough, Minos, Nico commanded.
The ghost sneered. Master, these are your enemies. You must not listen to them. Let me protect you. I will turn their minds to madness, as I did the others.
The others? Annabeth gasped. You mean Chris Rodriguez? That was you?
The maze is my property, the ghost said, not Daedalus's. Those who intrude deserve madness.
Be gone, Minos, Nico demanded. I want to see my sister.
The ghost bit back his rage. As you wish, Master. But I warn you, you cannot trust these heroes.
With that, he faded into mist. Other spirits rushed forward, but Annabeth and I kept them back.
Bianca, appear!
Nico intoned. He started chanting faster, and the spirits shifted restlessly.
Any time now,
Grover muttered. Then a silvery light flickered in the trees, a spirit that seemed brighter and stronger than the others. It came closer, and something told me to let it pass. It knelt to drink at the pit. When it arose, it was the ghostly form of Bianca D'Angelo. Nico's chanting faltered. I lowered my sword. The other spirits started to crowd forward, but Bianca raised her arms, and they retreated into the woods.
Hello, Percy, she said.
She looked the same as she had in life. A green cap set sideways on her thick black hair, dark eyes, and olive skin like her brother. She wore jeans and a silvery jacket, the outfit of a hunter of Artemis. A bow was slung over her shoulder. She smiled faintly, and her whole form flickered.
Bianca,
I said. My voice was thick. I'd felt guilty about her death for a long time, but seeing her in front of me was 5 times as bad, like her death was fresh and new. I remembered searching through the wreckage of the giant bronze warrior she'd sacrificed her life to defeat, and not finding any sign of her.
I'm so sorry, I said.
You have nothing to apologize for, Percy. I made my own choice. I don't regret it.
Bianca!
Nico stumbled forward like he was just coming out of a daze. She turned toward her brother. Her expression was sad, as if she'd been dreading this moment.
Hello, Nico. You've gotten so tall.
Why didn't you answer me sooner? He cried.
I've been trying for months. I was hoping you would give up.
Give up?
He sounded heartbroken. How can you say that? I'm trying to save you.
You can't, Nico. Don't do this. Percy is right.
No, he let you die. He's not your friend.
Bianca stretched out a hand as if to touch her brother's face, but she was made of mist. Her hand evaporated as it got close to living skin.
You must listen to me, she said. Holding grudges is dangerous for a child of Hades. It is our fatal flaw. You have to forgive. You have to promise me this.
I can't. Never.
Percy has been worried about you, Nico. He can help. I let him see what you were up to, hoping he would find you.
So it was you, I said. You sent those Iris messages.
Bianca nodded.
Why are you helping him and not me? Nico screamed. It's not fair.
You are close to the truth now, Bianca told him. It's not Percy you're mad at, Nico. It's me.
No!
You're mad because I left you to become a hunter of Artemis. You're mad because I died and left you alone. I'm sorry for that, Nico. I truly am. But you must overcome the anger and stop blaming Percy for my choices. It will be your doom.
She's right, Annabeth broke in. Kronos is rising, Nico. He'll twist anyone he can to his cause.
I don't care about Kronos, Nico said. I just want my sister back.
You can't have that, Nico, Bianca told him gently. I'm the son of Hades. I can.
Don't try, she said. If you love me, don't...
Her voice trailed off. Spirits had started to gather around us again, and they seemed agitated. Their shadows shifted. Their voices whispered. Danger.
Tartarus stirs, Bianca said. Your power draws the attention of Kronos. The dead must return to the underworld. It is not safe for us to remain.
Wait, Nico said. Please.
Goodbye, Nico, Bianca said. I love you. Remember what I said.
Her form shivered, and the ghosts disappeared, leaving us alone with a pit, a happy flush septic tank, and a cold full moon. None of us were anxious to travel that night, so we decided to wait until morning. Grover and I crashed on the leather couches in Garion's living room, which was a lot more comfortable than a bedroll in the maze, but it didn't make my nightmares any better. I dreamed I was with Luke, walking through the dark palace on top of Mount Tam. It was a real building now, not some half-finished illusion like I'd seen last winter. Green fires burned in braziers along the walls. The floor was polished black marble. A cold wind blew down the hallway, and above us, through the open ceiling, the sky swirled with gray storm clouds. Luke was dressed for battle. He wore camouflage pants, a white t-shirt, and a bronze breastplate. But his sword, Backbiter, wasn't at his side. Only an empty scabbard. We walked into a large courtyard where dozens of warriors and Dracine were preparing for war. When they saw him, the demigods rose to attention. They beat their swords against their shields.
Is it time, my lord?
Adrasina asked.
Soon, Luke promised. Continue your work.
My lord,
a voice said behind him. Kelly the Impusa was smiling at him. She wore a blue dress tonight and looked wickedly beautiful. Her eyes flickered, sometimes dark brown, sometimes pure red. Her hair was braided down her back and seemed to catch the light of the torches, as if it were anxious to turn back into pure flame. My heart was pounding. I waited for Kelly to see me,
to chase me out of the dream as she did before, but this time she didn't seem to notice me.
"You have a visitor," she told Luke.
She stepped aside, and even Luke seemed stunned by what he saw. The monster Campe towered above him. Her snakes hissed around her legs. Animal heads growled at her waist. Her swords were drawn, shimmering with poison, and with her bat wings extended, she took up the entire corridor.
"You."
Luke's voice sounded a little shaky.
"I told you to stay on Alcatraz."
Campe's eyelids blinked sideways like a reptile's. She spoke in that weird rumbling language, but this time I understood, somewhere in the back of my mind.
"I come to serve. Give me revenge."
"You're a jailer," Luke said. "Your job..."
"I will have them dead. No one escapes me."
Luke hesitated. A line of sweat trickled down the side of his face.
"Very well," he said. "You will go with us. You may carry Ariadne's string. It's a position of great honor."
Campe hissed at the stars. She sheathed her swords and turned, pounding down the hallway on her enormous dragon legs.
"We should have left that one in Tartarus," Luke mumbled. "She is too chaotic, too powerful."
Kelly laughed softly.
"You should not fear power, Luke. Use it."
"The sooner we leave, the better," Luke said. "I want this over with."
"Aww,"
Kelly sympathized, running a finger down his arm.
"You find it unpleasant to destroy your old camp."
"I didn't say that."
"You're not having second thoughts about your own, special part."
Luke's face turned stony.
"I know my duty."
"That is good," the demon said. "Is our strike force sufficient, do you think? Or will I need to call Mother Hecate for help?"
"We have more than enough," Luke said grimly. "The deal is almost complete. All I need now is to negotiate safe passage through the arena."
Kelly said. "That should be interesting. I would hate to see your handsome head on a spike if you fail."
"I will not fail. And you, demon, don't you have other matters to attend to?"
"Oh, yes," Kelly smiled. "I am bringing despair to our eavesdropping enemies. I am doing that right now."
She turned her eyes directly on me, exposed her talons, and ripped through my dream. Suddenly, I was in a different place. I stood at the top of a stone tower, overlooking rocky cliffs and the ocean below. The old man Daedalus was hunched over a work table, wrestling with some kind of navigational instrument, like a huge compass. He looked years older than when I'd last seen him. He was stooped, and his hands were gnarled. He cursed in ancient Greek and squinted as if he couldn't see his work, even though it was a sunny day.
"Uncle!"
a voice called. A smiling boy about Nico's age came bounding up the steps, carrying a wooden box.
"Hello, Perdix,"
the old man said, though his tone sounded cold.
"Done with your projects already?"
"Yes, Uncle. They were easy."
Daedalus scowled.
"Easy? The problem of moving water uphill without a pump was easy?"
"Oh, yes, look."
The boy dumped his box and rummaged through the junk. He came up with a strip of papyrus and showed the old inventor some diagrams and notes. They didn't make any sense to me, but Daedalus nodded grudgingly.
"I see. Not bad."
"The king loved it," Perdix said. "He said I might be even smarter than you."
"Did he now?"
"But I don't believe that. I'm so glad Mother sent me to study with you. I want to know everything you do."
"Yes.
Daedalus muttered.
So when I die, you can take my place, huh?
The boy's eyes widened.
Oh, no, Uncle. But I've been thinking...